We arrive at the last section of the book of Exodus and of our lesson, Exodus chapter 35 to 40. The glory that was seen on the mountain now fills the sanctuary that the people have obediently made together. Welcome to The Good Word. We continue our series on the book of Exodus. I am your host, Tiago Heiss. I am joined by my conversation partners, Dr. Matilda Fry and Dr. Jody Washburn. My dear friends, here we are. At the end of this long journey through the book of Exodus, it's amazing how some of these themes come together at the end now. We talked about these double stories that we have throughout the book about God's activity and human responsibility. God delivers the people from the Egyptians, and then the people fight the Amalekites. God gives the people the law. Moses breaks it after the golden calf, and then they have to rebuild things together. And in the sanctuary, God had given all the instructions, but now the people have to work together to build something, a place for God to dwell in. So here I would say, what is the meaning of this ending? And why does the text emphasize the Sabbath yet again, right before the tabernacle is built? What does this teach us about how we balance action and rest? And how is this meaningful to the ending of the book itself?
I want to say two quick things before. I want to save lots of time for Matilda to take us through the Sabbath and some of these.
Does Matilda have that look? I wasn't looking. Yeah, she does have a look that she's gonna read 35 to 40 right now.
You mentioned earlier in the series just wanting to sit with the attention to detail, you know, and be curious about the significance of that. And I think this provides us another opportunity to do that. I think of the difference between production and craftsmanship, you know. This is a picture of craftsmanship,
yeah,
where you take care, where you have beautiful things that are made carefully, and they therefore hold a lot of value. So there's that piece. And then I think there are other elements. I'll mention one. I mean, there are so many we could mention, but many scholars point out that just noticing the metal that's used as you enter into the sanctuary, it becomes more and more precious. You know, you go basically from bronze to silver to then more and more
gold. A lot of gold, yeah.
Yeah, and so just noticing those details. And then the other thing that I would like to draw our attention back to is you had in the very first lesson in the study guide a quote that juxtaposed two words, bondage and bonding. And I just want to bring us our attention back to that, this juxtaposition of God is delivering the people out of bondage. But essentially, if we think of covenant relationship using these words that we encountered in our last lesson, you know, the Lord, compassionate and gracious, slow to anger, abounding in covenant loyalty, then we get this picture of this increasingly both and, right? Increasingly involved, increasingly reciprocal covenant relationship. That is ideally, if we want to take social science language, like a secure attachment, right? Like the people are building this history that allows them to encounter and engage with God as their secure base that then allows them to go forth into their work and into the world. So
I love that. No, thematically speaking, theologically speaking, I think bringing us back, you're bringing us back to those words there that could help us make sense of this whole book, if you will. From bondage to this binding, this covenant belonging that God desires.
Yeah, and a relational way of being that is, again, it's dynamic, right? It's not rigid like bondage. It's this give and take.
It's
responsive
open
to whoever's in front of you, to the circumstance in front of you.
It's and that's the, I mean, the one of the novel things about what we find in the Exodus is this desire for the building of a covenant community. So we're not talking about simple democracy or empire. We're talking about a community that understands its relatedness to God and to each other in such a deep and meaningful way that it's as if they're a kingdom of priests that are constantly aware of the demand of God or the desire of God in each and every situation. That which is found within the horizon of the commands and the Mishpatim, and those who stand beyond them. And and here I want to make reference to the women in the beginning of Exodus again, that instinctively knew how to embody, how to live within the rhythm of divine desire. We find ourselves at the ending. We ended our last lesson talking about the sort of how the reconciliation happens after the golden calf, between the people, between Moses and God, between Moses and the people who he's supposed to lead. And I think it's beautiful that the ending of the book of Exodus sort of has a prescriptive way for us to imagine how to heal our own communities and societies. Here we sit in a Western world that is deeply politically divided. Los Angeles is burning right now. Other parts of the world are burning. We are experiencing a social collapse. And as I was preparing these lessons and studying for our programs, I was sort of emotionally holding on to this final idea that we find in these final chapters. And I'm going to read Jonathan Sacks. I have him quoted here in our study guide, but I have a book in front of me here, and I want to just mention this. He says, "It is at this point, at the beginning of this section of the book, that Moses commands the people again to construct the tabernacle. And this is the stroke of genius. It is as if God has said to Moses, if you want to create a group with a sense of collective identity, get them to build something together. It is not what happens to us, but what we do that gives us identity and responsibility. What transformed the Israelites is not what God did for them, but what they did for God. Until the making of the tabernacle, the story of the Israelites is a sequence of events in which God acted for the people. And throughout the construction of the tabernacle, the people work, and suddenly there were no more quarrels or complaints." So I thought that's deeply insightful. And it makes me wonder, what is it that we need to do today in our communities of faith, in our society, that can lead us beyond these divides to actually build something together? And if that's possible. Now, obviously, we're beyond the religious angle here. It's not like, all right, everybody, we have the book of Exodus and the Ten Commandments, but how can we position ourselves in the world in such a way, and what would be the role of the church in that, to allow those around us, to allow us to participate in the things happening in our society that are aiming toward a building together? So I know it's a lot of things to consider now, but yes, I'm turning to Matilda. Matilda, what do you have in your mind? You don't have to respond to these random thoughts, but I wanted to end this with a hopeful maybe. Could we imagine a day when we're actually in this country, in our city, in our communities, building something together and finding commonality, finding community in our diversity as we build something together and for our children?
I do agree with all of the things you said, and I believe how this entire framework from Exodus chapter 25 to 40, the end of the book, is composed in the way it's put together is so interesting and so important and beautiful. You have chapter 25 to chapter 31, the instructions that Moses received on the mountain, on top of the mountain, the instructions on the building of the tabernacle. Moses comes down and there are the people having built the golden calf, chapter 32 to chapter 34. So we have the instructions to build and then they build the golden calf. And then from chapter 35 to the end of the book, they finally come to actually build the tabernacle. But what is another framing element is the final part of the instructions and the first part of the construction. The ending of the instructions is chapter 31, verse 12 to the end with the Sabbath. Commandment. And then the beginning of the construction is chapter 35, verses 2 to 3.
Sabbath again.
So what is this doing? Sabbath becomes the Sabbath, the most holy, the day, the holy day of the Lord, becomes the framework for the story that is considered the most rebellious time of the Israelites in the desert. The golden calf, the most holy day, frames the condition of rebelliousness of humanity. And so you enter into the state of rebellion from the perspective of Sabbath, and you come out of it with the resolution for Sabbath out of that. And so the most holy place is given in the instruction and then in the construction, Sabbath at the end, Sabbath at the beginning, and in the center, you have the story of the golden calf that needs resolution, reconciliation. To come back to actually build the world that God intends the people to live in.
Yeah.
And Sabbath is the framework for that. The passage in chapter 35 about Sabbath makes a point here that is often like, we wonder about that. Why is that the case? It's a short passage. Mm-hmm. It's in 35 verse 2. 6 days you do your work, but on the seventh day you shall have a holy day, a Sabbath of Sabbaths, a Shabbat Shabbaton. Mm-hmm. Whoever does any work on it shall be put to death.
Yeah.
We are back in the framework of covenant mm-hmm. of a group of yep. people. You shall not kindle a fire in any of your dwellings on the Sabbath day. When you go to read commentators about this first three, about the fire, often this is about do not turn on your stove
cooking,
to
yeah.
prepare food and to cook. I propose that throughout the entire book of Exodus, every time fire is mentioned mm-hmm. in any part of the book of Exodus, and probably also in other parts in the Pentateuch, but fire is never the fire to use for cooking food. Mm-hmm. The text does not go there with the element of fire. Fire is always in relation to an extraordinary revelation of God.
Yeah, God falling.
Mount Sinai comes with fire. Either God or the opposite of God. The golden calf is burned into yeah. in the fire. Mm-hmm. So it's all about this like idea of the divine who comes with the element of fire. So fire takes on a symbolic meaning mm-hmm. in the book of Exodus. So we are not dealing with cooking food on Sabbath.
Yeah, very interesting.
Do not kindle a fire in your dwellings. Mm-hmm. Where are we? The people have come out of their dwellings. The people have come out to see the other in the open camp after the golden calf mm-hmm. reconciliation. And now they built the tent where God is supposed to come in. Mm-hmm. And so God is coming with the fire into the tent at the end in chapter 40 mm-hmm. in the book of Exodus.
Yeah.
And so that is where the focus is supposed to be, especially with Sabbath. We meet God at the end of the book of Exodus, and God comes through the symbol of fire and through the symbol of cloud mm-hmm. during the day and fire during the night, and fire will stay with them for the rest of the book of Leviticus.
Of the journeys, yeah.
The journey in the desert.
Oof, it's beautiful. And here maybe it's a good moment to pause and to bring our studies into conclusion with the reading of chapter 40 here toward the end. Then the cloud covered the tent of meeting. The glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. For the cloud of the Lord was on the tabernacle by day, and here you are, Matilda, and fire was in it by night, in the sight of all of the house of Israel throughout all of their journey. So it's this continued promise of divine presence. And again, it's beautiful to pause with the divine presence being here with the people in their journeys. That presence will be a very important theme throughout the prophets and as the books unfold, until we find this presence becoming flesh in Jesus and tabernacling with the people according to the Gospel of John. And what a twist to how the presence moves in Scripture.
So maybe do not take the burning bush into your own housings.
Be careful.
Leave it out there.
Leave it out there. Friends, my thanks go to my conversation partners, my friends, Matilda and Jody, to our program engineer, Corin Bailey, and to all of you for listening in throughout this whole series. For The Good Word, I am Thiago Reis.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.